Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here at RFERL, and author of an article we published yesterday about a remarkable spy story playing out here in the Czech Republic, but also touching on Russia, Ukraine, and Bulgaria, among other countries. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, Steve.
All right, well, a lot has been happening in and around Russia these past few weeks. And this week seems unlikely to bring much relief. There's the excruciating matter of imprisoned Kremlin opponent Alexei Navalny's condition 20 days into his hunger strike. There are the new sanctions that U.S. President Joe Biden's administration imposed on Russia last week, 2 days after Biden invited President Vladimir Putin to hold a summit in a third country in the coming months. Those are two things that Putin may comment on directly or indirectly in his annual address to Parliament, which is coming up this Wednesday. But let's talk about the spy story first. It broke on Saturday when the Czech government said it was expelling 18 Russian diplomats from the country. That's a big number. And Russia retaliated yesterday, not to be outdone, by expelling 20 Czechs or announcing their expulsion. But the story goes beyond the numbers. It stretches back at least to deadly explosions at a munitions depot here in the Czech Republic in 2014. And it also seems to tie in with the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter in Salisbury, England in 2018, as well as with at least one other poisoning. Mike, I'm going to let you take it from there. You worked with RFERL's Ukrainian and Bulgarian services on a story that brought the many threads together and set it out clearly. Tell us about it.
It's a crazy story, for sure. And as you say, it dates back to two mysterious explosions that occurred in the Czech Republic in late 2014. Two people ended up dying in those explosions, and there wasn't a whole lot of progress in the investigation for several years afterwards, at least not public, that the public was aware of. In 2018, however, there was a bit of breaking news in another country that appears to have set the wheels in motion for the announcement over the weekend. That event in 2018 was the poisoning of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Skripal, of course, was a former Russian military intelligence agent who had been kicked out of Russia and sent to England in 2010. And he and his daughter were exposed to the deadly Soviet-grade nerve agent, Novichok. They survived. The Brits very quickly determined, one, that this was Novichok that they were poisoned with, and two, that some Russian military agents were connected, were behind the poisoning. The Novichok thing caused a furor in England and throughout Europe, and there were lots of expulsions of diplomats that ensued. How this ties into the Czech explosions is as follows. The two men who are tied to, implicated in the Skripal poisoning, appear to be implicated in the explosions in the Czech Republic 4 years earlier in 2014. Now, there's no sort of like smoking gun or indictment that's been unsealed. Right. But what there is one, the announcement by Prime Minister Babiš on Saturday night that that Czech intelligence believes a secretive elite unit of Russian military intelligence was operating in the country. And two, the Czech police, the National Police Service, released a statement and photographs that identified explicitly these two men, the same two Russian men, as being wanted and as being in the country in 2014, around the time of the explosions. And these same photographs that were used by the Czechs were the same that were used by the Brits in 2018. Right. So where does that bring us to? As you pointed out, the Czechs kicked out 18 diplomats or ordered them out. The Russians retaliated by kicking out 20 and giving them not very much time to leave. And in fact, at a news conference today, the Czech foreign minister said that the Russian move has basically wiped out the Czech embassy's political and economic sessions, sections in Moscow. Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal, certainly for Czech and certainly for Europe, and certainly in the context of the tensions with Russia and the West.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, you know, it's a crazy story. So many threads and so many, you know, it goes back even if you think about Skripal, Sergei Skripal's being sent to West in the spy swap, and that was the one where Anna Chapman and I think 9 other Russians who were spying in the United States were sent back to Russia. So, you know, so many kind
exactly.
of, so many, I mean, it's nothing to laugh about, of course, but so many connections going back. And of course, we'll be covering this and continuing to report on it going forward with the language services. You mentioned the tension, you know, between the West and Russia. Let's move on to, you know, Alexei Navalny. That's a very big and urgent source of tension right now. The situation seems very urgent. He's on day 20, as I mentioned, of a hunger strike in prison. And his associates were saying late last week that he could die, or I believe on Saturday, that he could die in a matter of days. Now, the latest news just before this podcast began is that he's apparently been transferred from his prison cell to a prison hospital.
A medical unit, I think.
A medical unit that I believe is in another section or another lockup in the same area. And again, as they have in recent weeks, the Federal Prison Service says that his condition is satisfactory. Now, that's obviously differing extremely in the extreme from what he and or what his allies say. But that's the latest development. And apparently the prison service also said that he has agreed to be given some kind of a vitamin supplement. So we'll have to look into that further. But that's kind of the latest that we had. Now, over the weekend, Biden called the situation with Navalny totally unfair. And there are calls on Putin from around the world to allow him to be seen by his own doctors and to ensure that he gets adequate treatment. He's been demanding the cause of his hunger strike is to have access to his own doctor. And he's also has said that his jailers essentially are deliberately trying to harm his health, not just not treating adequately, but deliberately trying to harm him. And now his associates are calling for street protests on Wednesday evening, April 21st, which would be hours after Putin's State of the Nation speech, his address to Parliament. Mike, this is really difficult to talk about, but I'm going to frame my question this way. What should we be looking for this week when it comes to Navalny and the planned protests and Putin's potential actions on what appears to be very literally a life and death matter?
It's definitely high tensions or high political theater in Russia with the two competing events, the Navalny protests and Putin's State of the Nation, you know, speech to Parliament. And that's the intention. Clearly, the intention of Navalny and his allies is to not necessarily maybe even upstage, but certainly compete with the narrative that the Kremlin wants to put forward with Putin's speech. So and of course, his deteriorating health condition just adds more urgency to that. You know, if he dies, God forbid, between now and Wednesday, then, you know, all bets are off. It'll be a little bit of political chaos. If I had to guess, I guess it's not going to happen, that he'll have some sort of treatment and he'll be kept alive in some way. But you know, what this does mean is that, you know, there's a narrative that's being challenged here. And the Kremlin is all about narrative. It's all about storytelling and spinning the news and spinning the perceptions, first and foremost, for the Russian people. And the narrative that, or one of several narratives that Putin has spun over his 20 years in office is that he is, you know, the preeminent, the unrivaled leader, and he is in charge, and he is standing on the ramparts, protecting Russia from the interventions of the West, which are trying to weaken Russia and drop Russia back down to its weakened state as it was in the 1990s after the Soviet collapse. And so what Putin is doing is he's trying to seize the initiative and seize the narrative. And he's doing this, of course, at a time when Russia has massed its largest group of military forces on the border with Ukraine, the largest such forces since 2014. And that's an event that has just scared the bejesus out of not only the Ukrainians, but also the West, NATO and EU. They all have a contributing role in this drama. And, you know, the narrative, as the Kremlin has been spinning it, of course, is that these tensions are aimed at, one, preventing Ukraine from making any sort of drastic offensive move in the Donbass, where the war continues after 7 years. It's also, the narrative is, these military forces are deployed in order to fend off NATO forces that are being posted in places like, you know, the Baltics or the Black Sea region, or even in Norway. So, you know, Putin's speech he's trying to seize the initiative. He's trying to spin the narrative. He's trying to get out in front of the news and say, this is what's going on. Navalny's case undermines that. And this is where Navalny has been so effective over all these years. He is poking holes in that narrative and saying, hey, this is not the only story that's out there. Navalny's telling a very different story through his corruption investigations, through his poisoning with Novichok last summer, through his jailing, and now his prison sentence in this really brutal conditions in the Vladimir region east of Moscow, and now his health conditions. You know, probably is not to say that it was intentional that he planned to go into deteriorating health as a way to puncture the Putin narrative, but that's indeed what's happening. So Wednesday will be a very interesting day, and it will be very, very interesting to see what Putin has to tell Parliament and what sort of message he's trying to tell the Russian people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned the narrative. And I guess thinking about it, this move, if he's been moved to a medical unit, and also if he's getting vitamins, sounds like it could be a way for the Kremlin to try to tone down the urgency. You know, obviously, to try to make Navalny's supporters' calls, you know, less urgent, and the calls from the West as well, while not changing the situation in a very serious way. I mean, they haven't said, as far as I know, they haven't said they'll let his doctors in. So maybe a way to let a little bit out of the steam out of the situation ahead of of Wednesday. But the pressure obviously is still on. And, you know, you mentioned Navalny's puncturing the narrative with his anti-corruption investigations. And now, of course, I guess it was also late last week that the Russian prosecutors petition to have both Navalny's anti-corruption organization and his entire network of offices around the country deemed terrorist groups.
Extremist
groups. So that's something, you know, is it a trial balloon? Is it something they're holding in reserve? But obviously, I mean, it would be a huge deal for them to essentially destroy his entire network. And there are risks in that because a lot of people watch those videos, tens of millions of people watch the videos of the anti-corruption group and support, and millions support Navalny. So that could be a risky move. But it obviously the pressure is on kind of on all fronts.
Right.
I guess one more topic to discuss. It's also related, and thanks for mentioning the Ukraine situation. Last Tuesday, this is the U.S. kind of angle or part. Last Tuesday, Biden proposed a summit with Putin in the coming months. I think he later said summer. And 2 days after that, the United States imposed new sanctions on Russia, mainly over a cyber attack known as Solar Winds that affected federal agencies in the U.S. And also alleged meddling in the 2020 election that Biden won. Moscow was not pleased by these sanctions and announced retaliatory measures the following day, I believe, Friday. But to me, it seemed like Putin's spokesman left the door open for a summit nonetheless, at some point, not very soon, but, you know, in the coming months, as Biden suggested. Mike, obviously a lot can happen in a few months. Do you think the summit is like a no-go now that Washington has imposed the new sanctions?
So, you know, it's this interesting dance that's going on right now as the Kremlin kind of recalibrates or rethinks its dance steps with the country that it regularly sees as its greatest adversary, Protivnik, and that's the United States. You know, the Kremlin during the Trump administration had a very different approach, and the Biden administration is clearly taking a more aggressive, a more assertive approach towards the Kremlin. And you know, it almost looks like the Biden administration is being a little bit much smarter about how they're dealing with the Kremlin and Russian foreign policy. And the reason I say that comes from a really astute analysis that was made by Mark Galeotti, a well-known British political analyst and watcher of Russian intelligence services, among other things. Mm-hmm. He pointed out that Putin and Biden had this phone call. Biden said, "Hey, let's have a summit," and then they turned around a day or so later, and the Americans, you know, slapped the Russians in the face with these sanctions. Now, you know, if you're Putin, you're thinking, okay, do I go to the summit? Because this is something I really want. I want to be seen on the stage with the Americans. I want to be seen on the world stage with Biden, because that shows that, you know, we're at the table. We're the mighty power that the Soviet Union was, and Russia can see that. We talk eye to eye, and we negotiate eye to eye with the Americans. However, that could be seen as kind of a weak approach, because, you know, the Americans have just pissed off the Russians with these great new sanctions, and they've signaled that more are could be coming down the pike, depending on how the Ukraine situation goes. So, you know, under a normal scenario, the Kremlin would say, no, you've just imposed sanctions. We're not going to any sort of summit until you rethink your policy. But, you know, Putin wants a summit. He wants to meet and be seen on the stage with Biden. So, again, Mark Galeotti was the first that kind of sort of played out this scenario. And I think it's really an interesting observation that may speak volumes about how the Biden administration is approaching the Kremlin. You know, they've sort of put Putin in a corner. And then that might be overstating the case a little bit, but it's sort of made them have to think a little bit more strategically about how they're dealing with the United States. And so, you know, at this stage, I think it's way too early to predict whether the summit will actually happen. There's just too many balls in the air.
Yes.
Navalny, the Ukraine situation, more sanctions, the Czech spy scandal. I don't think that's going to go away anytime soon. Mm-hmm. And the Czechs are close NATO allies and very stalwart supporters of American actions in Europe and policies towards Russia. So there are way too many balls in the air to predict that the summit is going to happen at this point.
No, I agree. I mean, and I think, you know, you mentioned Putin sort of has choices to make, you know, depending, he has choices to make about how he affects the U.S. View of, I guess, you know, of what he's doing. You know, so there are variables on that side, but then there are also, you know, we have a few months There are variables certainly on the U.S. side in terms of, well, you know, there may be actions that Russia could take or things that could happen with Ukraine, with Navalny, that would presumably put pressure on or cause Biden to decide, you know, to withdraw the invitation. So, you know, as you say, there are lots of balls in the air, and you know, we'll keep seeing what happens, and as these weeks go by.
One other thing I should mention that didn't come up is, you know, the elephant in the room in many ways is Putin's future. What is his political future? And as, you know, loyal listeners to this podcast know, and close watchers of Russian politics know, there's a really big question hanging over Russian politics and Putin's future. We have constitutional amendments that have been passed and that open the door for him to stay in office for another, 15 years, I guess, potentially. But we don't know if he's going to go down that route. We've got Duma elections coming up this September where the ruling party is their approval ratings are in the tank.
Yep.
So there's a lot of flux going right now at work internally in Russia with the political situation and Putin's future. And the minute that Putin is seen as a lame duck or is seen as beginning to walk off the scene, then there's going to be a political vacuum that could cause all sorts of new uncertainty amongst the different factions and clans and blocs, the Siloviki, the liberal political blocs that want to push the Kremlin in a different direction. So that's the other thing to watch for on Wednesday with Putin's speech is what hints he might give about his plans for the political future.
Right, absolutely, and very, very, you know, useful for you to mention the, you know, the upcoming, presumably in September, state Duma elections, and that kind of setting the stage for the decision about whether Putin will run for president again in 2024.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely. That's a huge part of the context of everything else that we talked about. All right, we are running out of time. We're going to wrap it up for today, Mike. Thanks very much for joining me.
You bet, Steve.
All right, thank you. I'll be back next Monday for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. Please keep an eye out on Friday for my newsletter, The Week in Russia. Thanks for listening.